ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What would you do if someone you loved vanished and you discover the person she's been living with isn't who they said they were? I'm Dominique Baines, host of Expanse, the Nan Up 4.
Is he, you know, a murderer?
A self-styled cult leader.
It's just not knowing the emptiness, really, that just kills you.
This is the bizarre story of the Nan Up 4. Binge all episodes now. Search Expanse on ABC Listen and iView.
Julia Bergen.
Madison Connaughton.
Episode 3 of In Search of the Missing Artist.
Final episode.
This is the last one. But you're still in search of Jean-Paul Maljean. You haven't found him yet.
Still looking for Jean-Paul Maljean.
So where does your quest take you next?
We're actually going to go back to where it all started, to the five-star Fullerton Hotel, where I'm sitting at a table in this very grand lobby cafe opposite a man called Simon Dalhunty. And as he's talking, I'm pretty quickly realising he's not who I thought he was. Mm.
You thought he was a source. It turns out he's a media guy for Studio Gallery Group's lawyer.
Yeah, that's right. And he's telling me to stop asking questions and to back off the story and to leave this internationally acclaimed Parisian artist, Jean-Paul Maljean, alone.
Mm.
Remember that thick pad of documents that Simon has with him? The one that supposedly contains all these sworn statements and affidavits? Well, before he picks it up, it's sitting on the table, face up, in a clear plastic sleeve.
Mm.
And I don't know if you remember, but this is where, for the first time, Simon shows me that Jean-Paul Maljean is a nom de plume.
Yeah.
It's written in bold type on the front page of a confidential report. Jean-Paul Maljean, brackets, nom de plume. Meaning the artist's name is not real. It's a pseudonym. An alias, fake name, nom de plume. My head is spinning in that moment. I've got all these questions piling up on top of each other, but ultimately there's only one thing I can think about, and that's how is it that Jean-Paul Maljean is not the artist's real name? And nobody knows that. Nobody that I've spoken to has ever mentioned it. It's not in any of the marketing materials, but Simon's sitting there, telling me otherwise, that no, it's always been known that Jean-Paul Maljean is a nom de plume.
Whoa. And so the story is just shifting while you're sitting there talking to this guy.
The story is completely shifting as I'm sitting there. And Simon is claiming, no, Studio Gallery Group, Kerry Armstrong, they've always been completely transparent about the fact that Jean-Paul Maljean is a nom de plume. But it's certainly news to me.
Mm.
And so I start asking, I'm like, okay, hang on a second. All of these traits that go with who Jean-Paul Maljean is, you mm-hmm. know, French, internationally acclaimed, based in Paris, shipping works from Paris. Are they true? Does that go with the name? And he basically starts crossing them off one by one as being untrue. So Jean-Paul Maljean, not French.
What?
Although Simon says that Jean-Paul Maljean has French heritage, but Jean-Paul Maljean, not French. He's also not based in France. And he's not shipping his works from there either. So I'm sort of sitting there being like, but that's what they've been saying
mm-hmm.
on social media. That's what the gallery has been promoting.
That's the spiel.
That's been the spiel. That's what workers have been telling buyers for years. And Simon basically says, you know, that was just a silly little Instagram post. It was an elaboration.
So he's saying this is just a little thing. But that's not what you've seen.
Yeah, and, you know, what about all these global accolades? The fact that Jean-Paul Maljean is internationally acclaimed. And I said to Simon, have you met this person? Do you know Jean-Paul Maljean? And Simon said, well, no, I've never met him. Well, never met them. But I've spoken to them over the phone.
Them?
Them. So when I put to Simon and asked him, is Jean-Paul Maljean in fact a he?
Because he's been referred to as he previously in posts and stuff like that.
He's been referred to as he in all of the posts.
Yeah.
Simon wouldn't say. So everything I've understood Jean-Paul Maljean to be, French, internationally acclaimed, based in Paris, shipping from Paris, is not turning out to be true based on what Simon is telling me right now. and he keeps insisting. Studio Gallery Group's always been transparent that Jean-Paul Maljean is a nom de plume.
You've spoken to all these workers. If the gallery was so transparent about this, did they know about it?
So what I did is I called up Molly and Abby and Eliza one after the other. And I put the same questions to each of them.
Would it be fair to say that you understood Jean-Paul Maljean to be French?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
And his works were being produced and sent from Paris?
Yes. Yeah.
The artworks were being sent from Paris.
Were you ever told that Jean-Paul Maljean was not French?
No.
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 Were you ever told that Jean-Paul Maljean was a nom de plume?
No.
No.
No. Well, I can see where this is going.
And then I told each of them in turn that Studio Gallery Group had confirmed Jean-Paul Maljean is in fact a nom de plume.
When did they do that?
Recently.
It was news to Molly.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, that's how they were selling him and marketing him. Have they updated their website?
No.
It was also news to Abby, who worked with Kerry closely.
Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised that she's coming out and saying that now.
And Eliza, she was a little lost for words.
I mean, I guess I wonder why they felt the need to keep that from their staff, because I think other gallery spaces would probably just give their staff all the information that they needed to do their job. So I wonder why they went the really secretive route.
So it seems like there's a bunch of stuff that's kind of unusual about how the gallery's dealing with Jean-Paul. But the pseudonym thing, the nom de plume, that's fairly common in the arts. You have an artist like Banksy, Elena Ferrante, the author.
It is common, yeah. But what's surprising is that no one seems to have been told. And there have been opportunities to disclose this. For example, Liz Hobday from the AAP, who did the story last year, well, she told me she wasn't privy to this. And it was certainly news to Anya Perchet, the artist who's been on Jean-Paul Maljean's case for years. But there's another issue, which is to do with the fact that Studio Gallery Group is a commercial gallery. So it's not a space where people come to, you know, look and think and learn about art.
It's not like the Art Gallery of New South Wales or the National Gallery of Victoria.
Where you go in, you look around, you get challenged by what you see, you have a think about it and you leave. It's not like that. Studio Gallery Group's modus operandi is to sell art. It's to make money. And that means there's certain rules that it has to comply with.
Hi, Julia.
Hey, Rebecca. How are you going?
I'm good.
I'm speaking to lawyer Rebecca Gay, not to be confused with Kerry's lawyer, Rebecca Giles.
I'm a partner at Herbert Smith Freehills Kramer, and I specialise in IP and advertising law.
IP is intellectual property. I've called up Rebecca because I want to get my head around the rules of selling art in Australia. What is and isn't okay?
We have a thing in Australia called the Australian Consumer Law.
Rebecca's clear she won't draw any conclusions about Jean-Paul Maljean and Studio Gallery Group, but she is happy to talk about the laws and how they generally apply to the art world. So last week's lesson was plastic supply chains. Today, Australian consumer law.
Don't say you don't learn anything listening to Background Briefing.
I'm not going to recite you the law, but basically it states you need to be honest about the quality of the product you're selling, and you also need to be honest about where the product's coming from.
If I'm a consumer and I'm walking into a shop or whatever it is to buy a product, I can expect to be told the true characteristics of that product or the service.
And if not, If I'm given the wrong information or not enough information,
then that could be misleading or deceptive.
There is one really big caveat, though.
The law sort of accepts that you can make very obviously wildly exaggerated claims.
It's called advertising puffery. Fun term, but basically it means that anyone who's selling a product, right, is going to want to try and drum it up. So, for example, if somebody was selling, quote-unquote, Australia's best meat pie, that's a big claim, but...
most consumers are going to realise that that's not a true claim. That's just an advertising claim.
You're not being duped by it. However, if you decided to market your meat pie as being something like Sydney Food Festival's winning meat pie.
So specific.
Very specific. That's where the problem comes into it if that turns out not to be true.
That's a more positive representation about something which you're claiming happened. And if that was untrue, then that would be a misrepresentation.
Is it the same rules for where the meat pie comes from?
It is. The origin story of the meat pie matters.
If it was a representation that said this comes from the best farm in Australia, that probably slips into advertising puffery because it's just a general claim. But saying that product comes from country A versus country B is very likely to be problematic.
To draw it back to the art world.
Of course, there's a lot of artistic license.
But creative liberties shift when money starts changing hands.
Where art's being offered for sale, some of that artistic license could step over the threshold because now if you're creating a story around a piece of art, then that needs to be an accurate story.
And what sorts of things need to be accurate? Like, is there a problem in and of itself of selling work under a false name?
I don't think so, because I think what's a name anyway?
If that nom de plume came with a backstory, as you were saying, with, you know, certain facts and attributions and claims about where that artist came from, would that be then getting into the territory of misleading?
If that story is misrepresenting that the artwork itself comes from a different country, then that could be problematic.
Okay, so for Jean-Paul Mangin, the nom de plume is not an issue.
Yeah, that's right. But Studio Gallery Group has repeatedly made four key claims in their marketing material about this artist. They're French, internationally acclaimed, based in Paris, and shipping work from Paris. But Simon has now told me the works aren't coming from Paris.
And as we found, the gallery is purchasing materials from a local Melbourne supplier that appear to turn up in Jean-Paul's sculptures. So that would mean the gallery has misrepresented the origin of the works.
And that's one of the key things. You have to be honest about where something's coming from.
Yeah, it's written specifically into Australian consumer law. You cannot lie about the origin of goods.
I went to the national watchdog, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, for their take, but they declined to comment. So I put all of this to the gallery and asked if they'd been making misrepresentations about Jean-Paul Mangin to their staff and to buyers, but they didn't respond to those questions. Their focus has remained pretty squarely on protecting the identity of Jean-Paul Mangin.
I mean, it sounds like up until your investigation, the gallery managed to keep a lid on the fact that this artist's name and backstory don't match what they've told people. Given that they've now acknowledged that, why do you think they won't just tell you who it is? Why not give the artist a chance to explain how they ended up in this situation?
Well, the gallery has said this artist shuns contact, that they have trauma and that they're worried about serious psychological harm being done. So that could be one really legitimate reason why they don't want to thrust them into the public spotlight. Then there's the fact that this artist is selling really well and they might not want to disrupt that.
Sure.
But when you look at what we know about the relationship between Studio Gallery Group and this artist, you get the sense there might be another layer to it.
How do you mean?
Well, consider this. Remember how I told you Simon Dalhunty showed me he had that confidential report about Jean-Paul Marjan.
Yeah.
Well, he showed me the front page, so I thought, all right, he must be allowed to show me this document, so I asked to see more of it. And he said, oh, I'll have to ask Kerry about that.
Kerry?
Yeah, and I said, why Kerry? Why is Kerry Armstrong able to sign off on the release of confidential material about one of her artists?
Right.
And Simon wasn't really able to answer that. What he did say was Kerry's a very loyal person. She wants to protect Jean-Paul, and that's part of the contract. I'm like, hang on a sec, what do you mean that's part of the contract? He said, that's part of the contractual agreement between Studio Gallery Group and Jean-Paul Marjan, that the gallery will protect Jean-Paul's identity. But when former Studio Gallery Group worker Eliza went looking for that contract to check Jean-Paul's leasing rights, she couldn't find it in the system.
I never saw one.
Were you privy to the contracts of other artists?
Yes. So I could pretty much pull up any of the other artists' contracts at any time if we needed to double check the commission split or the leasing permissions or any other sort of contractual terms.
What's commission? Is that the split when something's sold?
Yeah, that's right. So if an artist is represented by a gallery, there's an agreement that they have right at the start which says if the gallery sells their work, the artist gets, for example, 60% of the sale and the gallery gets 40%.
And that's all outlined in the contract because it's legally binding what that split is.
Exactly. And that's all set up at the start when an artist is first brought on board. And so what Eliza's telling me is that it was important for the workers to have access to those contracts so they could understand what things like the commission split were, because it wasn't the same for every artist.
But yeah, I was never privy to Jean-Paul's contract, and I did go looking for it and I couldn't find it.
She wasn't the only one. Other workers said they couldn't find Jean-Paul Marjan's contract in the database either.
It strikes me, Julia, that this artist, Jean-Paul Marjan, it seems like there's something unique about the way he's being treated by this gallery. The way the works were being delivered stood out to the staff. The way they were being named and hung was unusual. They say they can't find any contract in the system. Now we've learned that the way the gallery was marketing him publicly might even put them at risk of, you know, being in breach of consumer law.
It's an unusual relationship, and it's one that seems to be very closely held. I've tried to find out as much as I can about the artist known as Jean-Paul Marjan, and really all that's left to do to better understand him is to turn to the people behind Studio Gallery Group, Kerry Armstrong and her husband, Michael Armstrong.
But neither of them wanted to talk to you. So how do you do that?
The silver lining is that Kerry Armstrong has this very public presence. She's done a number of tell-all interviews and her socials are public. She shares a lot about her business, herself, and her family. When Kerry and Michael launch Studio Gallery Group in 2016, Kerry decides she wants to shake things up a bit. She wants to create a space where artists making money is not only permissible, but it's encouraged.
That actually sounds like a kind of cool idea, because it's really hard to make money as an artist in Australia. It's really hard to make a living out of it.
Yeah, and when I was asking around, that is the feedback that some people gave, that Kerry is supportive of emerging artists. Unfortunately, none of these people wanted to do an interview, but they did describe Kerry as a real champion of this. And this business model that artists should make money, it's laid out in full in this hour-long interview that Kerry does with a podcast called Not Superwoman. The podcast wouldn't let us use the audio, so these are Kerry's words voiced by an actor.
They are often told at art school that, oh, you mustn't be selling your work. Well, how do they pay for their material? How do they pay for their lights, their food?
She's sick of the way that the art world is structured and this idea that, you know, you have an impoverished artist. You're an artist, you make no money.
I believe what we've done with Studio Gallery has definitely changed it, because we have a lot of very, very well-known artists that do work with us because they want to make money.
And that's exactly what she does. She sets up this commercial gallery that pretty quickly grows from 1 to 5 spaces across 3 states. She sells work, she leases work, she teams up with interior designers, real estate agencies, fashion labels, you name it. And she really transforms Studio Gallery Group into a brand. Kerry's not camera shy. She's done photo shoots for magazines and newspaper spreads that feature the art, the gallery, and her family's life. For example, the Sydney Morning Herald ran a feature on a renovation they did at one of their Victorian mansions, which was actually used as a location for the 1959 film On the Beach.
Okay, so their personal wealth is very much on show alongside the business.
That's right, but there's no clear line between what's business and what's personal. And that's because Studio Gallery Group is a deeply personal project for Kerry. It marks this new era in her life. The moment when she leaves her big, successful corporate career behind after a massive health scare.
Does she talk about what happened?
Yeah, she does. On that same podcast, Not Superwoman, she talks about this. She says she had a brain tumour. It's benign, but in quite an awkward position, and it's creating all sorts of problems for her. No doctor wants to touch it. Then she finds a top neurosurgeon who does. They operate. And she becomes synesthetic, which is like a mixing of the senses. So for Kerry, it means she can start to feel colour.
It's like Braille. I can kind of feel the work because it's a 360 value. The colour isn't just something that looks nice. It's got a mathematical rhythm to me.
So it sounds like this health event, this tumour, sort of brings her closer to art in two ways. It sort of deepens her artistic practice, but then it also inspires her to set up her own gallery and pursue it in a commercial way. She really dives into the art world.
She does, and it seems like this is a pattern for Kerry. She throws herself completely into the thing she does. She's determined. She's really dogged.
I'll say that about all of our family, that we know how to work. And I can really drill in and just keep going. And I'm very stubborn if I want something.
She actually talks about this in the podcast, having what she calls a warrior gene.
You know, it just means, like, don't say no to us. We don't compute.
Kerry was born in country Victoria in the 60s. She's 1 of 5. Her parents had a farm in the state's southwest. So she grew up among cattle and horses. In fact, horses were a huge part of Kerry's life, her parents' life as well. They showed horses, they raced horses, they were always around horses.
It sounds like it's a pretty nice environment to be growing up in.
It does. On Facebook, on Instagram, she puts up old photos of her family, you know, harking back to the good old days of growing up on the farm. One day, as I'm looking through some of these public posts on Kerry's Facebook account, I find something. It's a post from her, but it's not the post that gets my attention. It's who responds. Because there's a comment from a John Mangan.
John Mangan? Like
M-A-N-G-A-N.
Okay, that name is very close to Mangan, no?
Spelled a little different to Jean-Paul Mangin, but only by one vowel, M-A-N-G-I-N. It's close enough to stop me scrolling, and I click through to John Mangan's Facebook profile.
What do you see there? Like, is he an artist? Is there any clues?
His account's private, so I can't really see very much.
So no profile photo of, like, a Frenchman with a chisel?
No chisel.
No smoking gun. But you feel like there's something here?
Yeah, and I'm curious to see if there's any connection there. He's publicly listed where he lives and where he's from. So I key in his name, John Mangan, and his location into a standard Google search. And what comes up is a couple of news stories, but there's also a link to an obituary. And basically it's all I need to know. I now know where to find John Paul. All right, I'm just turning off the highway. We're very much in country Victoria here. We've got lots of beautiful trees. That Facebook post of Kerry's has taken me to Benalla, a regional town in the state's northeast, a couple of hours' drive out of Melbourne.
Beautiful little town?
Beautiful town, deep Ned Kelly country.
Let me find a park. When I say let me find a park, there's one other car here.
I get out and what I can see is basically a big grassy paddock.
It's peaceful. It's quiet. I hear birds chirping.
This big grassy field, it's a cemetery. There's this very orderly grid system of gravestones and each of them has a bouquet of fake flowers popping out. And I'm here to see Jean-Paul.
So we're after section S, plot 64. Let's have a look. Kid Goonan Walker.
I get to the one that I want.
And here it is.
And I read the plaque. And it says, Jean-Paul Chalwell-Mangan.
Wait, who?
Jean-Paul Chalwell-Mangan. Or John Paul Mangan, if you skip part of his middle name.
Is this the Jean-Paul that you've been looking for all this time? Jean-Paul Mangan, the artist. He's dead.
Well, this isn't the gravestone of Jean-Paul Mangan, the famous French artist. This is Jean-Paul Mangan, with an A.
At the top of his tombstone are two horseshoes, two upturned horseshoes, and a picture of a horse in the middle of both.
And on the gravestone is written the 1st of the 4th, 1922, to the 27th of the 7th, 2011. So Jean-Paul Chalwell-Mangan died at the age of 89 in 2011.
So about 15 years ago.
Yeah, and it says on the plaque that Jean-Paul's buried with his wife, and it also has the names of their five children. The John who commented on Kerry's post, he's one of them. The other names are Michael, Joanne, Anthony, and Kerry.
Armstrong?
Armstrong.
Are you serious?
I'm standing in Benalla Cemetery looking at the gravestone of John Paul Mangan, who is Kerry's father.
What is going on?
I mean, I'm there by myself and, you know, I can hear the highway going past on my left and
yeah.
Then there's birds and I'm looking at sort of farm machinery and I'm just trying to put all these pieces together in my brain. John Paul Mangan, Kerry's late father, is the nom de plume for the so-called internationally acclaimed Parisian artist exhibiting at Kerry's gallery, Jean-Paul Mangan.
Julia, you've been walking us through this story step by step, but I feel like now is the point I kind of have to ask a question that I've been holding back from. With all of these details, all these pieces you've put together, do you think you know the true identity of Jean-Paul Mangan?
Well, Studio Gallery Group has fought long and hard to keep this secret. The day before we were due to publish our first episode, we got another letter from their lawyers. There's been 12 in total, and this one was vowing to take us to court to stop the series going to air. They never followed through, but there's every sign they'll keep fighting to shield this artist's true identity long after this series ends. Despite that, we've been able to establish one thing very clearly. Whoever the artist known as Jean-Paul Mangan truly is, there's someone Kerry Armstrong views with enough favour, enough sympathy, to let them meet the world disguised in her own father's name.
Both Studio Gallery Group directors, Kerry and Michael Armstrong, said no to an interview. Instead, they issued three separate statements via their lawyer. In the first one, they said, Studio Gallery Group categorically rejects the premise, tone, and methods of Background Briefing's investigation, which reflects a sustained and harmful campaign against one of its artists. Jean-Paul Margent is the nom de plume of a real artist, a long-established and protected artistic practice. Despite being put on notice of serious psychological harm to this artist, efforts to unmask this individual have continued, raising grave concerns about privacy, safety, and ethical responsibility. There is no legitimate public interest in exposing the identity of an artist whose work is lawfully created and sold, and whose anonymity is protected for legitimate reasons. In a second statement, they also said, Studio Gallery is responsible for marketing of the artists they represent. Studio Gallery has audited its current marketing material relating to Jean-Paul Margent and have no concerns. The third statement, sent shortly before the release of this episode, is attributed to Michael Armstrong. It said that Jean-Paul Margent had been represented by the gallery under a nom de plume since 2021, having participated in this genre for many years prior. Michael Armstrong also said, the circumstances around the creation and adoption of their pseudonym are strictly confidential, and we will not betray the trust this individual has placed in us. While we are disappointed by the misinformation peddled by a few disenfranchised individuals, Jean-Paul Margent continues to be one of our most in-demand artists, the mystery surrounding their identity fueling interest in their stunning work. The artist has not listened to this series or engaged with the ABC prior to broadcast. They have been solely focused on their artistic practice. We did put questions to Jean-Paul Margent via Studio Gallery Group, but they didn't respond.
Background Briefing sound producers are Lila Schunner and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Simon Branthwaite. Music composition by Hamish Camilleri. Fact-checking by Justine Landis-Hanley. Our rollout producer is Ben Sveen. The supervising producer is Max Chalmers. And the executive producer is Fanu Falali. The reporter on this story is Julia Bergen, and I'm Madison Connaughton. To hear more episodes, search for the Background Briefing podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks for listening.